Well, all the sounds stopped. There's just a sort of, if anything, a very faint whooshing sound as I move through the air. Might be something like the inside of a float tank. It's sort of like sensory deprivation. Or probably the sound of a soft breeze rustling through the leaves of a tree on a summer's day. Because everything else was so still, things kind of registered on my mind as if from a distance, so that I could look at my body and see through the flesh and look at these little sort of yellow globules and then realise that that was a layer of fat, and see the blood sort of swirling around and notice that ants were starting to crawl into the wound. And so, yeah, it was like watching a silent movie in a way. Sound of the people laughing, standing on the side of the road laughing. And then it was the sound of my friend Tricia screaming.
You have no choice.
It was red.
Your body just goes.
I was so driven.
A red of blood
exploded out of my body.
My body remembers.
No, yellow. Yellow like fat.
The memory. The physical memory.
Or was it black?
New wiring that I have.
Bright. Brighter than lightning.
If you imagine all those volts going through you.
And dark. Dark as a landstorm.
Attack and decay.
Yes.
The event and its aftermath.
That was what happened. That was the event.
I kept riding far too fast and kept trying to slow down, and yet my bike would seem to take off, or I was completely driven. And we went around a very sharp corner, and as we went into the corner I glimpsed this sign on the side of the road that had a skull and crossbone drawn on it, and at that moment I saw Di on the bike ahead of me hit this big wooden truck coming around the corner. The next minute I was somersaulting through the air and I landed on the side of the road and saw my bike smashed up across the road and saw Di get up off the ground, and she was rubbing her elbow, laughing a little bit, and she had a little bit of blood running down her arm. She walked towards me and then I saw her face drop, and I looked down at my body and saw that my leg had been split open, and it was quite obvious I couldn't move, and I looked a bit further and realised my stomach had been split open, and after a while I looked a bit further and saw that I had a big hole in my thigh so I could see right through to the bone. And a number of people came up onto the side of the road and they were standing about 50 yards away from me, laughing. So that was the event.
How do you know? In this moment, it's written in your body memory, scarred onto the skin, traced along the nerves, engraved onto the cells, inscribed in the senses.
We as bodies were kind of quite brutally meeting machines, pow, bang, you know, obliteration, especially in World War I and II.
How do you know? In history, it is remembered through your eyes and ears, fragmented on canvas, cut onto the screen, exploded in the airwaves, bombarded on the battlefield. In this moment and in history, you know what happened through the senses, fragmented, shifted, rewritten by the traces of the event.
Shock.
Udar.
It means shock worker in the sense of a pulse, a blow, impact, thunderclap, udar. And udarnik is a shock worker. The term really seems to have something to do with electric shock, something that would shake up society. And I think you have to appreciate that this term comes into the Soviet lexicon at a time when electrification had enormous cultural resonance, a modernist fantasy. These were people who put in an extra shift or did a particularly strenuous task for the sake of the survival of the revolution in 1917. There was a kind of naive appeal that shock work had, particularly among new workers recently migrated from the countryside. So you do get this sort of outpouring of poems and songs.
The song of the women shock workers. See the stream of molten steel, its red and fiery glow. Magnitogorsk shall be cast up by hearts of dynamite.
So I remember feeling as if I was a train, and that sense of absolute rushing and the inevitable rush forward, and I knew that I was relentlessly rushing towards.
Montage, cinema, motor-driven vehicles were ways of being in a place to see, which was a moving place, a dynamic place.
That abrupt cut will wrench your senses as it takes you to another kind of attack through another fragment of reality.
Where you were was moving, what you were looking at was moving.
By bringing kind of torn out fragments of images from all kinds of original settings, tearing them out, calculatedly putting them together in a way that will bombard you with
the traffic of a big city, a series of shocks and collisions,
a series of ideas and affects. This is very much like being sort of violently taken on a ride, full of shocks.
Your vantage points are in this ever-shifting flux.
I see time and movement as very related. I don't just see it as time separate.
Modernism was a shock aesthetic because it contrasted what has just happened to what's happening now, what's happening in this mode of being as opposed to what's happened in that mode. And
oh, yes, the time.
Likewise, in colliding in unexpected ways, different modes, as in the very word, different nows, which is where the word comes from, Latin motto, means the present moment. By colliding different sorts of present moment, you get perceptions, you get insights, unpacking of the assumed.
Because the physical body is so involved in movement, when you experience time, it's sort of how you experience movement as well.
And then there's the sort of increasingly violent and aggressive nature of the auditory environment in industrial terms. The sort of attack of jackhammers and the attack of just industrial and transport noise that, you know, we live with, like boiling frogs we keep adjusting to.
A shock.
The explosion of me, it was so gigantic. It just the same effect of hearing a bomb go off close to you. The explosion in the ear.
In the ear.
On the 20th of November 1944, I was an Australian serviceman in the Army, stationed at the 58 Mile Peak south of Darwin, on the Stuart Highway in the Northern Territory of Australia. On that day, 1615 hours, I was on duty in the orderly room, seated on a steel trunk on a concrete floor, and I answered a phone call from Darwin. And during the course of the conversation, I was struck by lightning. My immediate thought was that there was an air raid by the Japs, and the first effects I recall was a terrific explosion in my ear and the immediate paralysis of my body. My body just faded away. I had no feeling whatsoever. Absolutely no feeling.
Thirty, 29, 28, 27, 26, 25.
All I can remember was being wheeled in.
23, 22,
to a little room.
21.
And they gave me some kind of pre-med. And then I went into the room. The next thing I remember was waking up in a ward full of rooms, someone offering me a cup of very sweet tea, and they'd given me the shock treatment while I was under anaesthetic, and the ward was full of other people who'd had the same treatment, so people were quite red in the face, and everyone was very vague, and it was a surreal kind of feeling, like no one knew what was happening. After I had that shock treatment, and I had about 18 of them, then I went to another hospital. The hospital was a big old Victorian hospital with about 1,000 patients. So it was an enormous place, and it had huge brick walls all the way around it, and I was in a locked ward. I was actually in a locked cell, and they gave me this treatment, which was carbon dioxide treatment, and they strapped me to this table, and then they put a mask over my face, and I remember this feeling like I was descending. I was spiraling down in a kind of blackness, and I was in this blackness, just spiraling down, 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 and it was like I'd always been there. And then I heard this scream, this ear-splitting, wailing scream, And the next thing I remember was sitting bolt upright, and this scream was coming from me.
I was stripped, totally naked. I left inside a really cold cell to think about my own situation. That was the treatment given to all prisoners they took along with me in order to make us feel dispossessed and in total solitude. So the guys came into the cell and started beating me all over, and they throw water over my body, and they apply electricity to the floor. Well, as I jump, I was falling down again and jumping again back to the air, and, you know, beating my tongue all over all the time due to this electroshock treatment given to me by these torturers.
And after, in the emptiness afterwards, which is before it begins, memories flood in.
Every time I listen to something like electroshock, my feeling get a bit disturbed. I'm transported to the past where I had a very personal contact with this sound, you know, physically. My conscience is in the present time, but the internal part of myself is somewhere else.
Even now, thinking about it, I'm just shaking again, really sort of inside my bones shaking, and I don't think your body ever forgets it. You just take it on physically, and I just remember one day being really aware of every hair in my body growing.
A shock of hair stands up in clumps. There's actually a technical word for the sort of hair that a poodle has, which is a shoff, or a shock of hair. The word seems to go back a long, long way, and it's, in its original usage anyway, rural. It means a sheaf of wheat stalks, 12 in number, or six in number, that stand close together in a field. Our notion of shock now, I think, has got a lot to do with that, but it's lost all of its rural connotations. What shock now usually means to us is a rough urban experience where things come together in a very intense enclosed space and implode within that space, maybe people in a city. But the numerical background to the etymology shock is really interesting too. Nearly always has to do with sixes for some reason or other. And the Middle Dutch, it meant precisely 60. Middle High German, it meant a heap of roughly 60 things. In Middle Swedish, it meant a crowd of something like 60 people. It's that numerical concept that shock contains, that it is of a certain intensity.
I started to count the time until I would be at the end of the pain, because I knew that that would come and it would be over. And I think I really counted the time 1 second at a time, and I literally lay in bed going, what's the time? What's the time now? What's the time? And with each minute that passed, I knew I was getting 1 minute closer to the time when it would stop.
Time just stops. It just hits you. The clock just stops at midday, midnight, or whatever. You just don't go on. There's nothing in, you know, your life is just cut off at that point, and that's it.
20, 19, 18, 17,
16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 11, 11, 11, 11, 11, 11, 11. And after? In the emptiness, afterwards, which is before it begins, memories flood in, a before-after time, echoing with anticipation, replete with memories and empty of past, resonating with inevitability.
I don't mind that such a sort of searing experience has left its physical traces all over my body.
Scarred onto the skin, traced along the nerves, engraved onto the cells, inscribed in the senses.
My memory is one when I arrived, I couldn't speak English, and then as time went on, I could, but I can't remember how long that took. And it's really marked by my school books, my exercise books in second grade while I was in Italy, as opposed to the sort of school books that I had when I arrived in Australia. So looking at the change in the calligraphy is the only way I've really been able to say there's been a huge emotional change that was going on within that person, within me at that time, and I really have no memory of it at all. It was like the writing from my Italian books had a real confidence about it. It was all in cursive writing done in biro, and my Australian school books was all block printing done in pencil, but they were being written by someone who had never done any writing before, someone who was learning something. And I suppose I was learning something all over again in learning the language and learning the culture. In leaving, I was issued with this ID card, which sort of gives a pretty good picture of me before I left. And this is a picture I found of me at school in second grade in Italy. And that's me there.
That smiling person?
Yes, yeah, that smiling person wearing pinafores and little black things with yellow-coloured ribbons. Yeah. I was looking back at them and thinking, what would that person be, you know, had that person stayed there and didn't have that kind of interruption or that huge change. This is a picture of my first year in Australia when I came to school in Australia. And looking at the image of myself, it's this very distant sort of look. Yeah. Like it doesn't even seem anybody I know. I just know it's a picture of me. But quite a sad face, I think. Quite lonely image. Yeah.
Thank you.
when I came here as a refugee, I was taken to a hostel in Vilagud. I was going through a cultural shock to be in contact with people from diverse backgrounds. All my senses were in alert. My ear could listen a lot of things, and especially the smell, the sense of smelling was really important to me because there's a lot of smell I never went across.
You're even sensitive when you hear the weather forecast, or you can expect thunderstorms, you know. And of course, the lightning with it, that's a complete revival of the whole event.
So what happened?
Try to imagine a calm water and you throw a stone into. And I made a connection between shock because something happened when the stone got into the water, produced waves, you know. And in that moment, the shock is gone through.
It was plunging deep into the marrow of the bone, causing along the neural circuitry, flooding into the cells, bright and vivid, dark and quiet, an ebb and flow of adrenaline, anesthetics for the syrinx, sublime pain, exploded, written, remembered, resonated in the senses. That was what happened. That was the event.